This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
It's Thursday, so it means this. We talked to Bernie Miklas. It's Chris Ranji, Gas House Gang today. We appreciate you being a part of the show every weekday from 12 until 1 o'clock, right in the middle of your work day right here on the lunch hour. This is a perfect time to take your lunch break, go out to the car or wherever you go to the park, something like that. Listen on the Odyssey app, and you can listen to Bernie and Ranji or Ackerman or Klaibs or whoever happens to be on that day just spouting nonsense. We love you. We love you being a part of it. Speaking of nonsense, Bernie, and there's a lot coming up on the show today. What in the hell happened last night at Enterprise Center? And the Blues have had so far just two games at home. But not only have they lost, but they've gotten blown out on their home ice. Again, only two games, but don't like it.
You know, I was I wasn't feeling well last night. You know, no big deal, just one of those days. And I laid down on the couch, and I'm like, this is great. I'm going to watch the Blues game. This will be wonderful. And, you know.
Made you feel worse?
I fell asleep, like, really early. I mean, I'm lying there. Let me correct myself. You know, it was 2-2, and then all hell broke loose, and I'm just like, you know, click, TV off. I mean, I can't stay up for this. I'm not feeling well. So anyway, I don't know what to say. I mean, gosh, hockey's a long, long, long season, and there are times where a team looks great and probably not as good as they appear, and then there are times like this with the Blues, their first two home games. We know this team ain't that bad, you know, so I'm just going to kind of stay level and understanding that the Blues will, in fact, reveal who they are.
And we think this is a good team. It seems like the majority opinion is that they're going to have a good year. They're probably a playoff team again. Maybe they win a round or so. It's possible. I guess they win a couple of rounds here. But I think they're better than, you know, the 2-2 record so far. And I would have a very difficult time believing they will have trouble winning on their home ice all year. This seems flukish to me more than anything else.
You know, I don't have numbers on this, which I know I overdo the numbers anyway. But there has been a longstanding trend in the NHL when a team that's based somewhere in the East or the Midwest, when a team goes on a Western Canada trip, especially, but they come back, and not every single time, of course, but it happens a lot. They will have a clunker in their first home game back from that trip. I don't know why, but it's one of those things I've seen some people write about. So the only thing that disturbs me, and really I'm not that disturbed at all, but I must say I am surprised that the two home performances have just been so just horrendous. I mean, there's no other way to put it, horrendous. So that's not going to say the same, though. I think it'd be nice for Blues fans to get rewarded for their support. I think in time they will. I'm sure Monty will get everything straightened out. This team does have good leadership as well. But, yeah, really sloppy, really they were kind of out of it last night, including the goaltender, Joel Hofer. And we know he's better than that.
Yeah. And Montgomery talked about focus. And I believe he actually used the word specifically focus, which is sort of a sports cliche. But in hockey in particular, that can be an issue. I know that a lot of people, I think, when it comes to sports and a team underperforming, it's just a cliche or a thing you fall back on to say, well, they're not focused. But sometimes it does happen. And, you know, it seems like that's happened at least last night. I think it happened in the first game of the season, too.
Yeah, and again, I'll give you a great example. And again, by the way, people don't need me to tell them this. So I'm not like a professor trying to lecture the class or anything. But, you know, we talk about how the story of the year in baseball were the Milwaukee Brewers. And, you know, they're probably going to get beat by the Dodgers, but there's no shame in that. But if you look back at the beginning of this year, and remember, as we coming into the year, we were all saying, well, I don't know. This is probably not one of those Brewers years. They're probably going to take a step back. Mm-hmm. And so the season opens. They open at Yankee Stadium, and they lose 4-2, 20-9, 12-3, and 11-1. I mean, They didn't just lose. The first three games in New York. Then they lost one against. They lost their first four games. Sorry, but they got absolutely demolished, except for one close game in those first four games. And we were all like, well, yeah, you could see it coming. They're just not as good. And then, well, we all know how that turned out. So that's just a reminder how crazy these seasons can go, you know?
Yeah, and so I'm not really worried about it. And you did mention the Dodgers and Brewers. LA's got a 2-0 lead. They play today. It's 5 o'clock. Is that early evening or late afternoon? What do you think it is? 5 o'clock.
I don't know.
I think it's late afternoon. Maybe early evening. Yeah. Anyway, 2 today. Brewers-Dodgers. Dodgers can take a 3-0 lead in that series. Blue Jays, huge win last night. Mariners still up 2-1, but the Blue Jays scored like 13 runs in that one, and they've made that a bit of a series. We are going to talk to J.P. Hornstra, who is a national baseball writer for Newsweek. He will join us at 12:30. We'll talk more about the playoffs and other baseball stuff. But I wanted to get this question into you, Bernie, before we hit the break, and we could talk more about it after the fact. But Yadier Molina on social media today, on his Instagram account, he posted a story, and it's a photo of himself, in a Cardinals hat, and he's on the field talking with press. And he writes this along with it: throughout my career, I've had countless satisfactions both on and off the field. After 3 years away from the lines, I'm ready to return to the field, whether as a coach or manager in MLB, Mexico, or wherever I can continue my baseball career, contributing and giving back to the sport I'm passionate about. That is Yadier Molina's quote. Just within the hour, he posted this to Instagram. And I don't think that's any surprise. We all knew that he was interested. His brother Benji has said multiple times he wants to be a coach. He wants to be a manager in baseball again. And we heard that report from last week from Puerto Rico, from El Vocero, that said he was in, though nothing was close, he had been talking with the Cardinals about possibly joining the coaching staff. There hasn't been a whole lot of traction there. My guess is that's not going to happen. But as far as Yadier Molina in a dugout as a coach for some team this season, how likely do you think that is?
Man, if nothing else, you would think a major league team would hire him for a coaching position, because the guy, his intellect for the game of baseball is, in baseball history, I'd put him up there with anybody. I mean, he's one of the smartest players ever, and he's a great competitor, and he's a great teacher when he works with young players. I got to believe that somebody, if Yadier Molina can't warrant a coaching job in Major League Baseball, then there's something wrong with Major League Baseball. I don't know what's going on with the Cardinals. I'm not surprised to see this, because I think there has been some confusion along the way whether Yadier was really ready to go back into baseball, professional baseball as a coach or manager or whatever. There's been some mixed signals along the way. So I think he wanted to get out there and let everyone know, shout it from Instagram: yes, I'm ready for a coaching or managing job in Major League Baseball or professional baseball. I'm sure he'll get some offers. And in a related note, really, really quick, Albert Pujols, the Orioles are trying to get him to interview for their managerial vacancy, which I think is exciting because I grew up as an Orioles fan. But I know Matt Holliday, I'm sure, would like that too, with his son playing there. So anyway, the former Cardinals legends, man, they're in the news.
So it'll be really interesting. I don't know if, and I think we brought up this possibility on Tuesday of him, just that thought of him being in the dugout along with Albert Pujols on his staff. I think for Cardinals fans, that would be, I don't know if disappointing is the right word, but there'd probably be a little bit of, oh man, look at that. We could have that. I think there are a lot of Cardinals fans who would have thought that. That doesn't mean it would necessarily be the best thing for the Cardinals to have them both in the dugout, but thinking about it is intriguing. Thinking about that possibility is.
It is. And let me just throw something in about the idea of a Baltimore staff that had Molina and Pujols, right? The Orioles have had a great young catcher. Adley Rutschman was a first overall pick who looked like a guy was headed to the Hall of Fame. He went off the rails this year. He's terrible. But the Orioles have, and I forget his name, they also have the best young catcher in baseball, as in catching prospect, who is going to be a superstar. But he came up to the Orioles late last season. But he is an immensely talented player. Now, if you're Albert Pujols and you take the Orioles job, I'm thinking Yadier Molina could make some pretty big impact right away, just working with those catchers.
And just to, you know, the social media drama and the cryptic posts that a lot of people do, and Bernie, you've seen it, athletes do it all the time, right? Which is, it's not my favorite thing in the world. If you're going to say something, just say it, right? And one of our viewers here who is watching on YouTube says that last night, Yadi posted a picture of himself when he was here for one of the weekends, and he put a sad face under it, sad face emoji. And the poster says here that he quickly deleted it a couple of hours after posting it. And I've seen a screenshot of it. And yeah, he's in one of the alternate jerseys, the alternate uniforms. He's on the field. He's got his cap up. He's, cap tipping the crowd as he's delivering the lineup card. And he has a little sad face emoji under it. And you can read into that what you want. I'm wondering if that means that he wants to be in St. Louis as a coach, but is not going to get the opportunity to be in St. Louis as a coach. Maybe they have told him that it's not going to happen, even though he wants to be here. And that's the problem with these posts, because it can leave it open to interpretation, and we have to wonder, what in the hell did that mean?
I totally agree. And, you know, Yachty's been like that on Instagram a lot, where, you know, he puts something up, he takes it down. He's a very emotional guy, which is one of the things that made him great. I just want to see it all play out and see where they end up. This whole situation from the Cardinals standpoint is rife with controversy and intrigue in a way that's not fair to some people. Ali Marmol, man, he's got to walk around. He's the guy that Mo hired, you know. And so if they wouldn't hire Pujols as manager, Molina's manager, it's like, that's another reason for people to dislike Ali, even though Ali's done absolutely nothing wrong. You know, when you put it into a popularity contest, even though I don't have any doubt that Molina and Pujols would be great leaders, great managers, but just at how it applies to the Cardinals, that selective view, it creates a huge problem. They're already a franchise that's got to win back their fans, but people won't like this, but I honestly believe this. Hein Bloom's got to do it the way he thinks he has to do it. That's why he was hired. He wasn't brought in here to conduct a three-ring circus. You know, yeah, you got to get the fans back, but you got to build a team that will get the fans back, right? And I just have an aversion to, like, for example, like just blasting Bloom because he didn't go the Molina or Pujols route. And he is getting blasted in some circles. I don't think that's fair to him. He was hired to do a job. He's going to do it his way, or he wouldn't have taken the job. And listen, people don't have to like Ali Marmol, but do not resent him because he's not Pujols or he's not Molina, because who the heck is?
Well, certainly as players, that's true. But Bernie, it doesn't. And I know you know this. I don't know that enough people understand this idea that just because Pujols is a first ballot, no question, Hall of Famer, one of the true right. Cardinals greats, will have his number retired. And Yadier Molina, also a Cardinals great. Just because those two guys were great baseball players and brilliant baseball minds does not necessarily mean that they would have the Cardinals in a better position now than Oliver Marmol did. And I'm sorry, but even if those two guys were both in the dugout in 2025, this team is still not going to the playoffs.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because again, it's so tough to talk about this stuff because people just lose their minds. I'm not going to echo what you just said, because you said it perfectly, but you know, the idea that you bring in Hein Bloom and you commit all this money to rebuilding the player development system, which is the biggest thing they can do, the most important thing they can do. But then you're Bill DeWitt and you say, oh, by the way, we want to get some fans back. So it may not be what you want, but, you know, we're going to ask you to hire Molina or Pujols. You don't do that. Who the hell does that? That's not the reason. That's like, don't bring him in if your sole purpose of this is to like, well, let's put a face out there that'll sell us tickets.
That's right.
It's just, you don't do coaches, it for those reasons.
Coaches and managers don't sell tickets. It's intriguing. It's an interesting idea, but it doesn't bring people out to the ballpark.
And one other quick thing. All right, let's say Pujols goes wherever. First of all, I think, gosh, Albert, don't go to Anaheim, man. Take the Baltimore job if it's offered. But anyway, suppose these guys are managers, right? Either, you know, this year, both of them major league, maybe next year for Yachty. No manager stays in a place for like 50 years. They all right. they all move right. on. Wouldn't the card, you know, if you're going to bring in Molina and Pujols, rather than do it because you just want to sell tickets, that'd be the only reason. Maybe their second job would be in St. Louis. And by then, they'll be much more prepared for the job, or at least they're prepared for the job now, but they would be better once they go through it for a few years. So, but I believe this firmly. The Cardinals have to put a really good, exciting team back on the field. That's how you get the fans back.
That's exactly so
Stick to your principles.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji on the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. We, again, will talk to J.P. Hornstra with Newsweek, covers baseball, a national baseball writer for them, and we'll talk to him at 12:30. But let us know what you think, what your questions and comments are. If you're watching the Gas House Gang on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter, we see all your comments, and we will get to some of those if we can here on the Gas House Gang, 104.1 FM, KMOX. Gas House Gang also available on the Odyssey app. You can get the podcast later if you miss the show. YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, just search it out and you will find us. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji today. We were just talking about managers and Albert potentially being one, and it looks like he's going to get a job here maybe very soon for 2026, and Yachty being in the dugout. And we were also talking about great players not necessarily being great managers. And Roy writes in on YouTube and says, what about Ted Williams? One of the all-time greats and was a poor manager. Now, I don't know if he was a bad manager. Maybe he just had bad players, but his managerial record, 429. So not good. And this is one of the greatest players objectively in the history of the game and could not win as a manager.
That the only thing I'll say, and I grew up in that area, and I actually like the Washington Senators a lot. They had a terrible owner. They were a team that just really had a pretty sad history of losing. And the thing I'll always remember about Ted Williams is that he became their manager in 1969, right? And if you look at pardon me, because I'm not getting my words out. In 1968, the Senators were 65-96. That's a bad record. Ted Williams' first season, 86-76. He was actually a good manager, but what happened is that Ted Williams became bored with managing and kind of lost interest. So that made him a bad manager, but his immediate impact in that job, phenomenal.
Bernie, let's speaking of managers, a lot of discussion this week about Mike Schilt, who abruptly retired mm-hmm. as the Padres manager. There was reporting since, you know, we last spoke on Gas House Gang on Tuesday about, and this is from the San Diego Tribune, also from the New York mm-hmm. Post, that basically he was difficult to work with when it came to his coaching staff, and that there was at one point a couple of years ago Cardinals coaches who had threatened to quit if he was brought back, which is kind of it's a shocking thing to hear. I have heard in the past that maybe he's a little abrasive with people that he works closely with. I think he was always pretty good with the media, always seemed to be really friendly there, apparently really good with players. But it's not the same as a coaching staff. What are your thoughts on all of that with him? And I think it's important because we do hear on this show from a lot of people who wish he was still the manager.
I think Mike Schilt's a very interesting guy because I think he's a really, really good manager. I also always loved the fact about him that he was born and raised a Cardinal, so to speak. John Mozeliak, he was a nobody. John Mozeliak gave him a job, and then he put him in the minor league system and coach, manager, manager, then in the major leagues, coach, manager. And so John Mozeliak and Mike Schilt were aligned. Mo was his biggest fan. So, you know, when this firing happened, it surprised me, but I hate to keep saying this, but the morning after the news came down, I had a pretty detailed explanation of basically the genesis of this, which was, you know, terrible, terrible dissension with between the coaches and the managers. And, you know, the coaches were feeling like that they were, you know, sort of getting attacked personally and belittled and ridiculed, and they've had enough of it. So Schilt forced the issue. He wanted, and again, I reported all this, and it's one of those things you report what's a really good story, and for some reason it just vanishes, and you know, no one ever acknowledges it. I guess that says something about me. But anyway,
no.
Schilt forced the issue. He says, we're firing all these guys, blah, blah, blah. And Mo said, no, we don't run things that way. Like, we got to try to work out our problems here. And, you know, and Mo, I think, reminded him, he said, you know, you're a hell of a manager, but you're not running the organization. You don't decide stuff that's above your pay grade. It doesn't work that way. And so they got into it, and then he was fired because he wouldn't back off this thing. Okay, so listen. He lost his temper. There were charges, credible charges in St. Louis that he treated his coaches poorly, and there was like a mutiny, and they were going to quit, as Kevin Acey, the San Diego Union-Tribune, reported, because he did a bunch of – he made a lot of calls, talked to a lot of people about what happened in St. Louis, and there was a mutiny. I mean, they were all going to walk out, and some people say, well, let them walk out. That's not – again, that's – You just don't let a manager become a dictator who's just basically going to determine who stays and who goes all over the organization. It's crazy. So I really thought Mike Schilt's a really good manager, and he overplayed his hand in St. Louis, and he put John Mozeliak in a position where he gave Mozeliak no choice. Either Mo rolls over for Schilt, which nobody would do in that situation, or he's just going to say, no, we do things differently. So I thought I would have bet a lot of money that Mike Schilt would have learned from the mistake he made of overplaying his hand in St. Louis. When he got a second chance, he goes to San Diego. He's a good manager there. And the same stuff happens again. Coaches just getting browbeaten and ridiculed and belittled. And a lot of times in front of other people. You don't treat coaches like that. Tony La Russa is the toughest manager I've ever seen. He never disrespected coaches like that. So Mike Schilt didn't learn anything from what he did wrong in St. Louis, because he did it again in San Diego. So I think it's unfortunate, because for some reason, for all his greatness as a manager, he can't control his ego, and he can't control his temper or this desire to be the authority. You know, and I wish him well, but there's some other things here too. I think John Mozeliak comes out of this looking a lot better.
I agree with you.
He couldn't defend himself because he had to give the philosophical difference thing. We can revisit this, but there was a non-disclosure agreement, so he couldn't divulge what exactly happened, and he honored that agreement. And so, well, he was supposed to. Yeah, but you know what? We're all in this game. If John Mozeliak wanted to put the word out on the street to hurt Mike Schilt, just put out there in the media and say, hey, look, this isn't coming from me, but this guy, I'm going to tell you some of the stuff that happened here. And if John Mozeliak wanted to be vindictive, or he wanted to really hurt Mike Schilt, he would have put the word out through the back channels without being named as a source. He didn't do that. In fact, he stayed here and took the beating as Mike Schilt became a martyr. He never had a chance to defend himself, and he quietly with a lot of dignity, went along with it and kept his mouth shut. And he did nothing, absolutely nothing, to harm Mike Schilt's chances of managing again soon. And that's what happened. John Mozeliak was a gentleman in this, by keeping his mouth shut instead of, you know, spreading dirt. But Schilt couldn't control himself when he got a second chance. So how this is John Mozeliak, any of this is John Mozeliak's fault? I don't know. I hope you're all enjoying your life in Candyland.
And now there's an opening in San Diego. Could it be Albert Pujols? There are reports that there might be some interest there. We will talk to J.P. Hornstra, who covers baseball nationally for Newsweek. That is coming up. It's Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji on the Gas House Gang on KMOX, noon to 1 every weekday. And we go to the guest line this afternoon. We've been talking quite a bit of baseball here, and J.P. Hornstra covers Major League Baseball, national baseball writer for Newsweek Sports, and J.P. is with us now on KMOX. We appreciate your time today. How you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, J.P., we thank you for being here, and we sort of wanted to get a national perspective on what is happening, first of all, in St. Louis. They have decided to keep Ollie Marmol. We know that Mike Schilt, the former manager, was let go by the Padres. He was let go here and seemingly under similar circumstances let go by the Padres. What is your read on the entire situation?
It's interesting because I think the retirement, if that's what we're going to call it, of Mike Schilt really did catch everybody by surprise. I've yet to encounter anything published, anything off the record that said, oh yeah, I could totally see this coming. You know, I mean, in terms of regular season winning percentage, nobody managed the Padres to more success than Mike Schilt. And for him to do that after year two, when the team had a pretty good core coming back, it's not like they're totally rebuilding in 2026. It just doesn't usually happen. With respect to what you were saying, you know, about some of the inner turmoil, if you will, between Schilt and some of his coaches and maybe some people who haven't spoken up about their relationship with Mike Schilt. Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to draw a parallel between what happened in San Diego and what happened in St. Louis. At the same time, I think that what Schilt said can be true, that the mental toll, the physical toll was just maybe more than he was willing or able to accept at this stage in his career. You're talking about a baseball lifer, somebody who certainly earned the right to move on to whatever the next chapter in his life holds. And I mean, if he was receiving death threats, as has been reported, and as AJ Preller confirmed with us on Zoom a couple of days ago, I wouldn't wish that on anybody, regardless of whether they got along with their employees, their coworkers or not.
You've been around a long time. You do a great job, but I wanted to get your like a broader perspective on this. The manager's job in baseball has changed so much. St. Louis is an old school baseball town, and I think at times it's kind of hard to reconcile the fact that, you know, the days of the superpower manager are gone. I referred to Tony La Russa when he retired as like the last of the Lions. And now, you know, by your observations, tell us how dramatic the job of manager has changed in Major League Baseball with the new front offices and the analytics and everything else.
Yeah, I think you can zoom out a little bit and say that every job in baseball is a little bit more specialized now than it was in the past, with the exception of players, right? Like those guys just have to go on the field and play and earn their massive paychecks. And I think that's always going to stay the same. But if you even look at the size of the average front office, right, the general manager, president of baseball operations, whatever you want to call him, the person in that position isn't the only one calling agents, calling other teams, making trades, making signings, you know, running the draft. All of those jobs have been kind of offloaded to other people, to where each person in the front offices, which have never been larger, can specialize on certain things. And that's true of the manager as well. I think if you just look at it in the context of the explosion of the baseball industry, to where everybody can specialize a little bit more than they could 10 years ago, 20 years ago, the manager is not an exception to the rule. And I think that's especially jarring for us in the media. Bernie, you know this as well as anybody. The manager is the guy who's basically the spokesperson for the organization. He's the one guy that we're talking to every day. Even the most accommodating GM is not out in front with the media as often as the manager. And in a larger market like New York or Los Angeles, that's a very taxing job. I do not envy the work that Aaron Boone, Dave Roberts, those guys have to do. And so yes, could an owner set it up in such a way that the manager is maybe kind of following an older model? Sure, if he wants to. Honestly, I think that we're seeing some of those comments flow from Anaheim, where Artie Moreno is probably going to look to his next manager to probably fit more of a Mike Scioscia mold. You talk about La Russa being the last of the Lions. Scioscia was kind of a Lion, right? They might try to do that in Anaheim, but that would be exceptional to what the trend that we're seeing. The job is very different. It's a lot more specialized. And for the most part, I don't think you're going to see it revert back to the way it was when La Russa was managing the Cardinals.
Speaking of that job in Anaheim with the Angels, we have seen the reporting that Albert Pujols could potentially become that manager. Also, there's been some reporting that the Padres are interested in him. How do you see that situation playing out with Albert?
It's an interesting one because I can't think of a better player, certainly in recent memory, jumping to the manager's chair, especially this quickly after his career. Paul Molitor is a Hall of Famer, one of the best hitters I've ever seen, but even he wasn't as good, as elite of a hitter as Albert Pujols was during his career. So just from the standpoint of how many guys have Albert Pujols' resume as a player and want to sign up for the grind of the manager's chair, that's rare to begin with, right? And I think in the case of, you know, Artie Moreno in Anaheim, he's already got Albert Pujols under contract as a special advisor. So in that sense, it makes sense. But it's also kind of a splashy hire. It's a big name. If you're attracted by the name Albert Pujols to buy a ticket to watch your local team, if he's the manager, hey, maybe that sells a couple more tickets. I don't know. It's unusual in that his experience is not long. And yes, he managed his Dominican Winter League team to a championship. Some people might have been watching. If you're the general manager of the Orioles or the Padres, you might have been watching those games to see how Albert Pujols, tactician, served in that role as manager. I don't know how many teams, though, are doing that. And it's kind of unusual in that sense. There are a lot of veteran managers who are going to be free agents this offseason, some of whom are already getting interviews. But as first-time managers go, I don't know if Pujols' resume and name brand power is enough for him. Like, he's got to ace the interview. I think there's a little bit of burden of proof on him, just as there would be for any first-time manager, to show well when he sits down with the owner, the general manager, anybody else who calls him in for an interview.
JP, I wanted to ask you this about the playoffs. You know, in the American League Series in particular, you know, we're seeing home runs. And that's a staple now too. Home runs are a way you win ball games. The Brewers can manufacture, some teams can do it well, but the big flies really matter. But you wrote about this. My gosh, we know that the Dodgers have spent a fortune on starting pitching, and they've got so much of it that they're actually putting starters in the bullpen. But this run that they are on, and as you pointed out, and I'm glad you did, it actually started before the postseason. This starting pitching, it's like taking me back to like 1968 or something. It's unbelievable this, what they're doing.
It is, and I don't think if you had asked Andrew Friedman when he spent that money last offseason, if this is how he would have drawn up his playoff pitching staff for the NLCS or for the World Series, if they make it that far. I think a big part of it is by necessity. Tanner Scott's had a pretty lousy season. Kirby Yates, even when healthy, was not the guy the Dodgers thought they were getting when they signed him last offseason. And fortunately for them, Roki Sasaki's been mostly lights out in his first year, really, not just in Major League Baseball, but in this role of, you know, being a closer, having to pitch on back-to-back days. Like, this is all new to him, and fortunately it's worked out. But I think in Game 3 and 4 here in Los Angeles, you're absolutely going to see Dave Roberts try to push Tyler Glasnow today, Shohei Ohtani tomorrow, as deep as they can go into the game. And if that means Clayton Kershaw is the next man up out of the bullpen, don't be surprised. It's what works for the Dodgers. It's what worked for them so far. And I think if that was your bullpen, Bernie, you wouldn't want to call on those guys either.
That's right. No, absolutely.
JP Hornstra, covering baseball for Newsweek. We thank you for talking with us today. Enjoy the games tonight, two of them, two LCS games happening starting at 5:00. We, again, thank you for talking some ball with us today.
Always enjoy it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 1041 FM KMOX.
When Bernie Miklas is with us on the Gas House Gang on Tuesdays and Thursdays, it's brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. We with you until 1 o'clock today, and Bernie is here. Bernie's back on Rush Hour Sports tomorrow at 5 o'clock on KMOX with Matt Pauley and I believe Kevin Wheeler also, unless Kevin decides to take the day off, which he doesn't because he never stops talking. So you can always, if you want, on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, if you are watching the show, find the Gas House Gang there, and it's very easy to locate. Odyssey app as well. And here's a message, Bernie, that you must respond to. This is from Safari Elvis, who says, Schilt won 17 games in a row. Schilt went to the pennant in 2019. What has Ollie done, Bernie?
What does that have to do with anything?
I don't know. That's a great.
If Mike Schilt hadn't have gotten himself fired, he'd still be here. I honestly don't. Is that supposed to be a gotcha question?
I don't know.
He went nuts on his coaches and issued an ultimatum to the guy he works for, and forced him to make a tough decision, because you don't let managers be in charge of the world. Okay, Mike Schilt would still be here had he just maintained, you know, whatever you want to call it, just calm leadership instead of going, you know, just going nuts on his coaches, which he did again in San Diego. So what exactly is the point? And also, would you please tell me how much talent he had compared to what Marmol has had the last three seasons in St. Louis? Oh, the all-powerful manager. He alone determines whether a team wins or loses. Oh, my goodness. Thank you. That was awesome, man. Thank you. You gave me, I got to get ready to write a column, and I'm like I haven't had any coffee yet. So you got me fired up. I love it.
It gets you going, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I love it, man.
I mean, a dude now twice where he's won twice has now basically imploded. And only in this fan base would somehow that all be directed back to an attack on Ollie Marmol. What?
So, Bernie,
was Ollie Marmol out there sabotaging Mike Schilt in San Diego? I mean, what, people are just cuckoo. Anyway, I love it though. It's great entertainment. I love it. Thank you.
I'm with you. You know, I'm with you now. Yeah. So we've, I don't know how accurate of a thing the Pythagorean is. You know, if you go to Baseball Reference, the Pythagorean, basically, the calculation is based on the number of runs scored and runs given up. Here's what your team should have won. Here's what the record should have been. We had talked a lot about this past 2025 season and how they were overperforming in terms of wins, the Pythagorean. Based on the amount of runs scored and runs given up, they were doing better, outperforming by about four games. The 2019 Cardinals was a game under. The Pythagorean said they should have won 92 games. They ended up winning 91. Again, this is not a gospel. This doesn't mean everything. It is just something to look at, that clearly when Schilt was managing the 2019 team, he had a much better club to work with. And look at his rotation as well. You know, he had Flaherty, who was good. Miles Michaelis was really good back in those days. Adam Wainwright was still doing it. You know, so this was not
right.
This rotation this year, woof. It's so different, and I don't really quite understand why people don't get it. But
yeah, if you look back to 2024, according to the method, you know, of the underlying factors and run differentials, the Cardinals should have finished 10 games below 500, but they finished four games above 500.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. It's weird that there are certain fetishes in St. Louis when it comes to baseball.
You're right.
I mean, you know, and if you got the John Mozeliak taint, it's all over with. Ollie will never get a fair shake by the the mosaic fetishist.
You're right.
He just won't.
Bernie, go crush that column, and we'll be...
See you, brother.
Yeah,
we'll be
listening in to you tomorrow on Rush Hour Sports at 5 o'clock. That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Chris Ronji. The Gas House Gang brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Dave Glover is next. It's his 25th anniversary on the radio today. Listen to that show coming up next on KMOX.